Welcome to the MLB Trade Rumors Podcast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the MLB Trade Rumors Podcast, although we are changing the name to Dodgers Chat because I think this is going to be the fourth episode in a row that we have a Dodgers transaction to discuss. If you're a Dodgers fan, that's great for you. If you're everybody else, you're probably sick of it. But we have to talk about what goes on this show. So the last three episodes... what am I doing? Before I get into it, my name is Darren McDonald, and I'm with my MLB Trade Rumors colleague, Steve Adams.
Hello. Hello, hello. Thanks for having me back on. It's good. I think it's been like a month since I've been on, so it's good to shake off the podcast rust.
We have all missed you, and we're going to help you get that rust off.
It's going to take some doing, but we'll try.
So, like I said, the Dodgers have done a lot. The last few episodes of the podcast, we have had Shohei Ohtani and then Tyler Glasnow and then Yoshinobu Yamamoto to talk about. This time, they signed Teoscar Hernandez to a one-year, $23.5 million deal. This was surprising. A lot of people thought he could do better than this, but it's sort of a prove-it pillow thing. How did you feel about it, Steve?
Yeah, I think, we made the 4-year prediction on the top 50 at a lighter annual value than this. And he's one of the guys that even when we were talking about and kind of doing our groundwork and trying to estimate where we thought these guys were going to land, he's definitely one of the people that I think probably felt shakiest about. Teams are increasingly reluctant to kind of pay for this skill set, which is, you know, bat first, corner outfield profile, but not necessarily, the plus defender, doesn't have like tons of on base, doesn't walk a ton. So he doesn't draw a high on base percentage really. It's not a profile that teams love to pay for. And I think our thinking was, well, there's so few bats out there this offseason that someone's just going to say, you know, we need to bolster the middle of the lineup, and paying, $19, $20 million a year for Teoscar over, 4 years is a risk that we'll take. I imagine that he and his representatives had similar thoughts heading into free agency. You know, you saw Nick Castellanos get 5 years and 100 from the Phillies a few years ago. Kyle Schwarber, 4 years and 79 from the Phillies. We've seen JD Martinez get 5 years and 110 from the Red Sox in the past. So, imagine that Hernandez was kind of looking at those deals and thinking along those lines. And it does happen from time to time where you see kind of a higher profile free agent. The longer term deal isn't there, so they take the shorter term, 1 year contract or maybe 2 years with an opt out kind of thing at the higher annual rate. And that's what Hernandez did here. I think a year and $23.5 million is really good value for the Dodgers. I know Hernandez didn't have his best year last year, but all the batted ball metrics still looked really good. He's not, 37 years old. He's in his early 30s. And even with the down year last year, he was still ended up as an above average hitter, which he's been, for the past 4 years now. I mean, he's if you lop off like a really bad start to last season and a really poor finish, like through the middle of the year, he was kind of who he was, that guy who's about 25% better than league average at the plate, going by WRC plus. He hit really well for a large chunk of the middle of the season. He just kind of face planted at the end, and that probably hurt his stock some. But for the past 4 years, like there's really only a couple of months where he's just been pretty cold and below average, but he's by and large, he's a genuine middle of the order hitter. I think the Dodgers are better off for this, and it's nice for them that they're able to get it done on a short-term deal. And since the Mariners did not make a qualifying offer to Hernandez at the end of last season, the Dodgers will have the opportunity to do that if he has a bounce back year. They can make him that qualifying offer and they can recoup a draft pick in the 2025 draft. My God, that sounds like a year from a science fiction novel. that's what we're looking at. Mm-hmm. But I think that's some nice upside for them as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned that we thought the lack of bats would help him out, but it doesn't seem like that's really working for anybody. I mean, I guess it worked for Shohei Ohtani, but he's in a different class, so it's almost like the market, it doesn't really matter what the market is. But, you know, Jamer Candelario and Lourdes Gurriel Jr., we predicted them for 4 years, but both of them only got three. Teoscar only got the one, as we've been discussing. You know, Bellinger is still out there. Sorry, go ahead.
We thought 3 years on Mitch Garber, 2 years for him.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's it. I think we thought that teams might overreact a little bit more to the lack of impact hitters who are out there, especially coming off of last year where we saw some really, really aggressive free agent spending. And it just hasn't been the case this year, maybe in part due to the uncertainty around a lot of the regional sports networks throughout the game. And teams not knowing exactly what their television revenue is going to look like. But it just the market, like you said, hasn't had that boom effect for the kind of like middle tier bats that we thought might exist.
Right. Okay. Well, it's a nice upgrade for the Dodgers. Their lineup gets even stronger. Mm-hmm. But let's move on from them, because I'm sure many of our listeners have had enough of hearing about the Dodgers. I should mention, as we record this, we are recording this on the evening of Tuesday, January 9th. Information is just starting to come out about Shota Imanaga agreeing to the Cubs. We're not really going to talk about that too much this week because we don't know the details of the deal, but that will be something that we will discuss on the next episode for sure.
Absolutely.
Let's turn to a trio of trades that I found fascinating because they all sort of came out within an hour of each other, and they all seemed sort of interrelated with some team crossovers, some positional crossover, fascinating hot stove stuff that kind of came out of nowhere. First off, the Giants agreed to acquire Robbie Ray from the Mariners in exchange for Mitch Haniger, Anthony DeSclafani, and some cash considerations. Then the Mariners made another trade, sending Jose Caballero to the Rays for Luke Rayleigh. And then the Rays made a second trade, sending Andrew Kittredge to the Cardinals for Richie Palacios. So a bit of musical chairs going on here. Steve, you were on vacation at the time, or paternity leave at the time. Were you following? Did you have thoughts? Were you confused while changing a diaper and trying to look at your phone at the same time? Or what was going on?
Well, I broke my paternity leave up, which was nice. So I did the first chunk of it right after our little guy was born last week, early in the new year, because that also lines up with my wife's birthday, which was nice of Tim Dirkus, our owner, to kind of let me split it up that way. So thank you, Tim. But yeah, I was following it loosely as it was happening. On the surface, I like what the Mariners did. They took a player who was not going to help them in the first half of 2024. I really am working on not saying 2023, which is difficult. But
it takes a few weeks.
But help them in the first half of next season. Robbie Ray's recovering from flexor and Tommy John surgery. He might not pitch until late in the 24 season, honestly. And they are, you know, tight on money this offseason, clearly, based on, you know, comments from Jerry DePoto, and also based on the moves that they've made. So they kind of take a dead money asset for the first significant portion of the 2024 season and, you know, flip that around for some guys who are maybe not as desirable for the Giants as they were when they initially agreed to those contracts, but who can help them early in the 2024 season. You know, the Mariners know Mitch Haniger very well. He adds a bat to help replace the departure of Hernandez, who we just discussed. And DeSclafani gives them some rotation depth that Ray, you know, could not have provided. And, you know, in doing so, they managed to also kind of free up some long-term payroll. You know, when they signed Robbie Ray coming off of the Cy Young year, they really, I mean, any team signing, especially a pitcher like that to a long-term, you know, 5-6 year contract, you really want the first few years of the deal. It didn't work out as the Mariners would have hoped, obviously. Ray was mostly solid after a rough start to begin his Mariners tenure, although I think, you know, most people are just going to associate his time with them with that Yordan Alvarez moonshot in the postseason, unfortunately. And then he gets injured the next year. So it frees up some long-term flexibility for them, you know, addresses some present day needs. And then they turn around and make another move to bring in Luke Rayleigh, who, you know, had a rough finish to last season, but a really strong first half. And it's kind of looks the part of a late blooming, you know, above average, but, you know, somewhat limited slugger in terms of his strikeout rate and maybe some platoon issues. I do find it fascinating, though, or a little contradictory, I guess, that DePoto specifically said early in the offseason and was using the strikeout tendencies of guys like Jared Kelnick and Teoscar Hernandez and Eugenio Suarez, some of these guys that they subtracted from the roster, saying we need to add more contact to the lineup. And then you look at, you know, where they've ended up, and really struck out in almost a third of his plate appearances last year. Haniger strikes out not quite as much, but, you know, upper 20% kind of guy in recent years. I don't know that they've actually wound up dropping their strikeout rate that much. Certainly the like adding Luis Urias does a little bit, but that's also, you know, probably a downgrade offensively from what Suarez was. So you kind of wonder, like, maybe that was the goal early on. Was that lip service? Was that the goal? But like, it just, they weren't able to, you know, achieve it the way that they wanted to. And so they kind of pivoted. I do just see some overlap in the types of players that they subtracted and some of the bats that they've added. So I'm a little perplexed by that, but I do think, you know, the Mariners probably have more well-rounded roster than you might have expected. If you had said early in the offseason, hey, they're going to have to keep their payroll around $145 million, I think you would have said it's going to be tough for them to create a well-rounded roster. And I think DePoto has, you know, kind of succeeded in deepening the roster while working with what's clearly a limited, you know, budget and a limited hand dealt to him by ownership.
Yeah. So they have, it's interesting. So just keeping track of the pieces for Seattle, because, you know, because of all these deals, or lack thereof in the case of Teoscar. So Teoscar is out. Suarez is out. Kelnick is out. Tom Murphy is out. But mm-hmm. They brought in Haniger. They brought in Rayleigh. They brought in Mitch Garver. And yep. Did I say Haniger? Or Urias is the fourth piece. Yep. So, yeah, I don't know. It does seem like a lot of moving things around and sort of ending up back where they started, kind of, depending on how you feel about those pieces. But I do think, like, there is a slight drop. It's not a huge drop, but, like, Teoscar, Kelnick, and Suarez were all over 30% strikeout rate last year, I believe. And I think Rayleigh is the only one that would apply to of their new additions. With Garver and Haniger, it's down to a quarter, so it's not like a huge jump, but I guess it's, I don't know, it's something.
The new guys combine for somewhere, I think Nick Deeds mentioned this in something that he wrote for us, but they combine for somewhere around 27 to 28%. So, like, it's a little better, but they're all still, with the exception of Urias, like, fairly strikeout prone. I think the one thing you could say is that if they were just going to retain the status quo and run it back, it probably would have cost them more than the current roster, and they wouldn't necessarily have had the depth because Ray would have been on the shelf. They wouldn't have Desclafani, who can either open the season in the rotation or is kind of like a long man and step into the rotation to either help manage some of the innings for younger guys like Bryce Miller and Brian Wu and Emerson Hancock, or step up when, you know, somebody gets injured. So
they also would have still had Evan White and Marco Gonzalez on the books.
That's true. They would have had Gonzalez. Yeah. So, yeah.
So. You know, it's kind of like, it seems like they had to move a bunch of contracts around just to end up where they started without, you know, just for financial reasons.
Yeah, it's, I understand the flack that the DePoto and I guess just the Mariners in general have gotten, but I feel like it's a little misplaced putting it on the front office, because it's like it clearly comes from ownership. I don't think Jerry DePoto and Justin Hollander entered the offseason saying, you know, it would be really fun if we spent the entire offseason kind of making weird lateral, you know, moves to like marginally lower the budget just so we can kind of like end up with a similar product to the one that we had last year. I don't think that's, you know, their idea of an ideal offseason. But I mean, you work with what ownership is going to give you. And unfortunately for the Mariners, who are dealing with some, you know, uncertainty about their own television situation, what ownership was willing to give them was not a whole lot. So, you know, I think they've done a decent job working with what they have, but I do understand the frustration from Mariners fans as well, for sure. We'll see. They've got a little bit of money left to work with. Things might look better. I think Whit Merrifield is an awesome fit there. I would love to see them go sign him to, you know, 2-year deal, plug him in at second base. And that would significantly, you know, improve the contact skills of the team. And then you can kind of, you know, use Josh Rojas and Luis Urias at third base, and you're not necessarily reliant on both of those guys kind of rebounding after a pretty rough 2023 for both of them.
All right. Well, Jerry, if you're listening, call Whit Merrifield. You heard it from Steve.
there are other teams in this shuffle that we should discuss too. I honed in on the Mariners there, but like we have the Giants end, the Rays.
I was just going to say, the Giants, my feeling about how this impacts them. I mean, on first blush, there's still so much offseason left, but on first blush, it depends entirely on whether they make the playoffs or not in 2024, because, you know, they're making a big bet on Robbie Ray coming back in the second half of the season and being like that big rotation boost. But right now it's like Logan Webb and four question marks in the rotation. So it's sort
especially
of,
with Imanaga now going to the Cubs, that's another, you know, Giants starting pitching target who isn't going to San Francisco. So they're kind of back to square one, back to the drawing board as they look to continue trying to round out the staff.
Yeah. And if they get Snell, then my feelings would change. But
Or Montgomery.
But right now it's sort of like, well, you gave up a guy. I mean, Descalfani's been hurt a lot, but at least he was, you know, not recovering from Tommy John surgery the way Robbie Ray is. So you're making a big bet on Ray coming back later. And he also has an opt-out at the end of this year, which, you know, feels like he probably won't trigger because he's only going to get like a couple of months in before that opt-out. But it's only like 2 years and $50 million he would be leaving on the table. So I don't think it's like a 0% chance that he opts out. So, you know, there's at least some scenario where they have Ray for a couple months and they just miss the playoffs and then he's gone.
I don't know even if that would be like a huge... Well, I guess Haniger had the opt-out too, but like, even in that scenario, I feel like they kind of just get out of jail a little bit on the last year of Haniger's contract, although it's pretty front loaded. So maybe that wouldn't even be a huge difference maker for them long term. I keep cutting you off. I'm sorry.
No, that's OK.
Podcast Russ, like I said.
Well, it's good. I think the back and forth is good. Remind people that we're human beings. But yeah, the Giants rotation, Logan Webb, I'm looking at their Fangraphs or their roster resource page right now. Logan Webb, Ross Stripling, Kyle Harrison, Keaton Wynn, Tristan Beck. That doesn't seem like a finalized rotation for a competing club.
They have Alex Cobb coming back from hip surgery as well, and he'll factor in there at some point. But I mean, we don't know exactly when. He's a 36 year old, I think, you know, coming off of a not insignificant surgery, and he's had plenty of injuries in the past. So it's, you can't necessarily just say, oh, well, he'll be back by May 1st. And we don't know exactly how that's going to shake out. So I think if they, you know, you get 100 innings out of him next year, you probably have to be pretty happy.
Yeah. So I'm assuming the Giants still want to do something in there, but
probably need to do a couple of somethings in there to
probably a couple of somethings. Yeah. But if Robbie Ray comes back and is lights out in the second half and then is like, you know, starting a playoff game for them, then that will be a big win. But there's a lot of ifs in there.
Yes.
So who else did we do? The Rays, their end of this trade seems to at least be somewhat related to all the Wander Franco unpleasantness, because they gave up, you know, Luke Raley. You mentioned he kind of tailed off in the second half, but, you know, an outfielder with some success for an infielder with a little bit less offensive prowess, but a bit more defensive ability. And he can slot in at shortstop, perhaps. But they also gave up Andrew Kittredge to then replace Luke Raley in their outfield mix and get Palacios in. So a bit of a classic Rays musical chairs thing going on there, where they move pieces around and hope that the downgrade from one to another isn't huge.
I think the Rays have demonstrated like time and again that above all else, like Raley is the type of player that they're very good at acquiring and finding and maximizing. You know, we see them. They did it with Harold Ramirez. They bring in, you know, kind of corner, limited corner guys, get some success out of them, and then flip them elsewhere fairly frequently. You know, they've done this with Austin Meadows and Corey Dickerson and many other. I could go on and on. I'm blanking on plenty of names who fit this bill, I'm sure. going off the top of my head here, but they have a knack for, you know, finding that good, you know, short-term pickup in the corner outfield or at first base and DH, and then, you know, flipping him elsewhere after a good season or two. Caballero feels, like you said, related to the Franco uncertainty and unpleasantness is probably a better word to use than uncertainty. But, you know, a lot of there's some similarities there with Rayleigh, not in terms of skill set, but in terms of how their 2023 season played out, because, you know, Caballero had a great start and was hitting really well, not for much power, but getting on base and hitting for average early on. And he really tailed off as the season wore on as well. And he's a couple of years younger, an extra, at least extra 1 year of control, maybe two. But they're both guys who could be kept around for, you know, 4 or 5 in Caballero's case, 6 years. So I don't know. I understand the thinking and the thought process from them. It does just feel kind of very vintage Tampa Bay. I think some fans of other clubs kind of roll their eyes at like how they can, you know, they're constantly, you know, shuffling the deck chairs around a little bit, but you know, it works for them. And it's something that's born out of necessity, at least originally, but I think they've also kind of turned it into an art form. And it feels like every year, you know, most people are looking at the Rays roster saying, well, there's no way this group's going to contend. And then you look up at the end of the season and, you know, they've got 95 wins or 100 wins or whatever it is. And you're just kind of scratching your head saying, how did they do it again? I look at them and think they still need some help behind the plate and some help in the rotation. But some of the trades that they've made have freed up a little bit of money. And if they end up trading Harold Ramirez, as they're apparently trying to do right now, that might free up a little more. And this could all just be, you know, precursors for some further additions that kind of help round out the roster.
All right. And as for the Cardinals, they were less involved than the other clubs. They gave up
yes.
a nice depth outfielder who was a little bit blocked. Palacios probably was going to have a tough time getting into the lineup without a major injury. And they've turned it into, you know, a flyer on a relief pitcher in Kittredge, who he's on the older side. He's 34, but he has
super
been
talented.
Like all-star level performance in the past. So it's
when
a nice flyer. Yeah, it's a nice flyer for them to take to turn a depth outfielder into perhaps a solid bullpen addition.
Yeah, I think Kittredge is among, when he's healthy, is among the more underrated relievers in baseball. You go back and look at a few of the years that he's had kind of at his peak with the Rays. And I think some people will probably be a little surprised to look at. He's definitely not somebody who people are particularly familiar with. But I mean, you look at, you know, the year he had in 2021, 71 2/3 innings with a 188 ERA. He walks like no one, misses bats. He throws pretty hard, generally keeps the ball on the ground. He's just he's a very talented reliever. Like you said, a little bit older, and he can be a free agent at the end at the end of this season, but potentially like a really big bullpen addition for them. And like you said, Palacios just isn't somebody who was going to find his way into playing time on a lineup that has Jordan Walker and Tommy Edman and Dylan Carlson and Lars Nootbaar and Alec Burleson and so many outfield options. It makes a lot of sense for them. So I like, that's one of those trades that I feel like is going to potentially work out pretty well for both parties as long as Kittredge can remain healthy. But I'm a big fan of his arm.
Okay, well, let's get to your questions. We put out the call for questions and got a whole bunch, including a significant batch on one particular topic that everybody hates.
Sorry for telling you we were done with the Dodgers. We're not.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to talk about the Dodgers kind of a little bit. But we got questions from Darren, Doug, Gus, Chris, and someone who cares. That's their name on their email, who all basically want to know, in so many words, if Major League Baseball is going to change the rules about deferred money because of what the Dodgers are doing. Is this going to come up in future negotiations? Can the league stop it? Will they stop it? Et cetera, et cetera. I mean, a lot of people are really getting hung up on what the Dodgers are doing. But, I mean, I think you and I have talked about this before. It's not really as new as people think.
Yeah, it's not new at all. You know, I did a chat on the site today, although when this comes out yesterday, so on Tuesday, we'll say that. And, you know, I one in 10 questions, I feel like, was about this. So I kind of got on a little soapbox about it, and I knew it was going to be that way. So I had some prepared like numbers and examples and stuff. But like, it's not new, like in any capacity. The Nationals for the better part of a decade included deferred money and significant deferred money in almost every free agent that they signed. And in some cases, in some of the extensions that they signed, they had significant deferrals in the contracts for, here we go, Max Scherzer, Steven Strasburg, Patrick Corbin, Matt Wieters, Daniel Murphy, Jason Worth, Rafael Soriano, Brad Hand, and John Lester. Half of Max Scherzer's $210 million contract was deferred, including his entire $35 million salary in the season that they, in the 2019 season when they won the World Series. And there was no, you know, call for, you know, heads to roll and for Major League Baseball to, you know, completely, you know, restructure its collective bargaining system. There was no, you know, cries that the Nationals had broken baseball by, like, they deferred their ace's entire salary that year and used that flexibility to build a roster that won a World Series. And like, no one blinked. It just wasn't a big deal. The Nationals are still paying Rafael Soriano, and he hasn't pitched for them since 2014. So that's just, and that's just one team. You know, the Orioles deferred about a quarter of Chris Davis's $161 million deal. The Reds were deferred, you know, Bronson Arroyo's extension back in 2010. And I think, you know, everybody talks about and knows about the Bobby Bonilla thing with the Mets. But like, to me, maybe the single most amusing example of this that doesn't get anywhere near as much play is the fact that in the mid 80s, the Braves signed Bruce Sutter, rest in peace, to like a 6-year, $9 million contract. And they deferred the entire payment over a 30-year period beginning in the early 90s. So like, they were paying Bruce Sutter like almost up until he passed away in 2022. And he wound up, you know, basically making around, I think it was $40 to $50 million on that $9 million contract. It's just, it's not a new concept. Like, this has been going on for literally decades in baseball. I think the scope of the Ohtani deferrals is certainly causing people to, you know, turn their heads and take notice. And I've said, you know, on the site before too, I think the fact that the contract was announced by Ohtani's agent, who Nesbalelo with CAA, and hey, I would do the same thing if I negotiated this contract. Why not? You want it to look great, but of course he's going to announce it as 10 years and $700 million, even though the league basically treats it as 10 years and $460 million. I don't think there would be so much backlash if it had been framed as a 10-year, $460 million contract that was deferred with interest. Now, there still would be a lot of people who were, you know, rightly a little like baffled, and maybe it's fair to say that the Dodgers are kind of getting away with a little bit by paying, you know, the best player in baseball $2 million a year. But that's also one of those things where I feel like every fan in baseball wishes their team would have done that too. Like, you're, you know, pay the best player in baseball $2 million a season over the life of the contract. And then yeah, you can deal with the deferrals, you know, a decade and a half down the line, that's fine. Yeah, it's not something, a signal that the game is broken to me. It's not a new phenomenon. I understand that it's jarring to see, you know, $68 million annually deferred or whatever, but like, the Braves president of baseball operations, Alex Anthopoulos, even came out in a interview with Jeff Schultz at The Athletic. That's really, you know, definitely worth reading for Braves fans and just for baseball fans. I think in late December, and he basically said, like, yeah, you know, the contract, the net present value ended up exactly where we thought it would. So like, he's, you know, kind of just like brushed off the notion that, yeah, this is some crazy game breaking, you know, shenanigans by the Dodgers. He kind of just looked at it and was like, yeah, that's about what we thought it would. Teams get creative to structure huge contracts for players all the time, and this is just a different example of that.
That's all very well said, and I think that one thing that gets lost in all of this, like, people complain about this and, you know, the way they ask questions it's almost as though like the Dodgers are using some sort of cheat code that like nobody else thought of. But the thing is, like, the player and the agent have to agree to it. Like, these are things that are negotiated, you know, like you mentioned Max Scherzer, like he had to agree to defer all of the payment, not all, but like the amount of money that he deferred on that
$105 million. That's a huge amount of money to defer, like a decade in Scherzer's case. So, yeah.
He had to be willing to do that. And, you know, in Ohtani's case, it was apparently his idea because he wanted the Dodgers to have more money to spend on putting a good team around him. And then also, of course, incidentally, he doesn't have to pay taxes if he leaves the state of California by the time he gets those deferred payments. But this isn't some like slimy, cheaty thing. Like this is something that was agreed to by all sides. And so that's why, I mean, some people asked if, you know, this is going to change in the next CBA. And I just don't know, like, which side is going to bring this up as a priority. It works for the teams because it makes it easier to sign big players. And then for the players and the agents, they can sort of, like, lie about how big the contract is, essentially.
Yeah.
And, you know, they can sort of structure the deal this way if they want. It's a freedom that they have that they don't have to use if they don't want to.
And I think, like, too, another thing that's lost is, like, the Dodgers are still going to pay him that money. Like, it won't be that, you know, they're going to be this potential dynasty in the short term, but there is going to come a time where all of the deferrals on the Ohtani contract and the deferrals on, you know, Mookie Betts deferred $115 million of his contract, I think, and no one, you know, batted an eye at that. Freddie Freeman deferred close to $60 million. All those deferrals are going to come due, and it at some point probably will hinder the Dodgers. It just won't happen in the near future. And, you know, that's, I think a lot of people are just like, well, they're getting away with something. And it's like, maybe they're getting away with something in the short term, but like down the road, it still will hurt them. And that maybe that's small consolation for, you know, particularly fans of teams like the Giants and the Diamondbacks and the Padres who share a division with them. But yeah, it's, I just don't look at it as this, like you said, this slimy, cheaty, you know, get out of jail free card that some people have framed it as.
Well, I'm skeptical of how much it will hurt them, because I think they just start putting money in escrow now and then let the interest build
that
up.
That is true. That is true. Yeah, that's true. I forgot about that detail. Yeah, that's true. Okay.
But anyway, like I said, they have to agree to it. Okay, so let's get to another question here. I think we have time for one more, which is on a related note. It's about contract financial stuff, and I guess, yeah, you know, that's why you come to MLB Trade Rumors, because we understand all this stuff. It's all relative.
Did you hear what I just said? Ignore me.
Spencer wants to know, here's his question. I've heard a lot of clamoring for a salary floor with all of the offseason moves. Personally, I don't think that would make a noticeable difference for fringe teams. I think it would just inflate salary for mid-tier players, which essentially just creates more deals people think are overpays. What's your take?
I do think there would be some of that with a salary floor. Teams and players are always going to find a way to quickly kind of game it. You know, we've seen it with the luxury tax. We see it even with like the actual bottom line payroll, the deferred contract structure that we just referred to. I also just don't find it feasible. You know, there's a lot of talk about, oh, you know, the league needs a salary cap, the league needs a salary floor. Like, to me, it's just kind of, you know, the equivalent of like yelling at a brick wall or yelling at the clouds, because the teams and players are never going to agree on either of those concepts. They even like briefly talked about, I think MLB threw out, you know, a salary floor as a possible concession during the last wave of CBA talks. But in exchange for that, they wanted to lower the top luxury tax, or to completely like decimate the top luxury tax line. I don't remember the exact way that it played out, but it's just, there's no realistic scenario where either team or either party is going to budge to the point where implementing a salary cap or a salary floor is just even seriously considered.
It doesn't seem like it, no. And
yeah.
I also don't even think, like Spencer seems to allude to in his question, I don't think it would really solve much if there was a salary floor. I think I've heard people, including our colleague Anthony Franco, and maybe yourself as well, Steve, suggest that if there was a salary floor, what you would just see is the lower, like any rebuilding team would just start taking on bad contracts in order to get more prospects. So, you know, let's say the A's, they would trade for Patrick Corbin or something to, you know, clear $30 million off of Washington's books or whatever. Like, they wouldn't actually go out and just, you know, help Matt Chapman get a new deal or whatever.
Right. And I think that's the salient takeaway. Like that's what I'm kind of referring to in like in finding ways to game this is like it would just turn into a mechanism to buy prospects. And then those same teams that have concerns about, you know, signing players to these long-term mega contracts would in turn probably still turn around, flip them when they got to, you know, 3-4 years of service time, whatever it might be, and then get more prospects for that. And then probably take on some more bad contracts to like get back over the salary floor. It wouldn't be exclusively that, you know, I think we saw like last offseason, you know, the A's in the 2022 to 26 collective bargaining agreement just had their revenue sharing status reinstated in that CBA. They had it taken away from them. They weren't receiving revenue sharing because they weren't investing the money that they received from revenue sharing into the product on the field sufficiently. But, you know, they didn't go and say, OK, well, we need to spend some money. Like, let's go out and sign some big time players here and put together a competitive team. They went and kind of overpaid on some utility players, you know, to just, oh, hey, look, we spent money. But I mean, giving Jace Peterson $9 or $10 million and giving Aledmys Diaz $14 million. I think those are the types of deals that you would kind of see, these like short term, like deals that don't really move the needle, that, you know, if things play out nicely, you know, maybe they were able to trade, you know, Jace Peterson to the Diamondbacks prior to the deadline. You're going to see deals like that maybe net you like, okay, like some kind of fringe prospect or something like that. And then you can clear the second, you know, the second year of the deal, or the money owed for the remainder of the current season, whatever it is. I don't think a salary floor is going to take a team, you know, A's, Marlins, Rays, whoever it is, and say, okay, we need to go and make a serious effort to, you know, sign Blake Snell or even sign Eduardo Rodriguez. That type of contract just still isn't going to be feasible for these teams, because the margin for error that they have will still be super thin. Their revenue still is going to be what it's going to be. And the risk or perceived risk that they feel in signing somebody to a 4 or 5 year deal worth $20 million per season is still going to be too great.
Okay, well, that's about all the time that we have for this week. Steve, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for helping me knock my podcast rust off, but I probably need a few more instances or appearances to get there. But we'll keep working on it. We'll keep chipping away.
We'll have you back soon with less rust. So
if it's possible.
Keep it tuned to MLB trade rumors out there, because there's just over a month until pitchers and catchers report, if you can believe it. But there's still so much to happen. Blake Snell is still out there. Jordan Montgomery is still out there. Matt Chapman, Cody Bellinger, a whole bunch of stuff. Dylan Cease trade. Lots of stuff that still has to happen. So keep checking the website. Sign up for the front office package to get the ads out of there. And then you also get bonus stuff that's pretty cool. And we'll have another podcast episode for you next week.
Thank you for listening to this week's podcast. Remember to visit MLBTradeRumors.com and follow us on Twitter at MLBTradeRumors.